Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. And it is Saturday in the Eastern time zone as we record this. No, it is not. It's Friday. I'm so screwed up on the dates. It's New Year's Eve, I guess. And that's just several hours after Purdue's momentous, I don't know what other adjectives or words that you wanted to describe Purdue's 48-45 overtime win in the Music City Bowl. That victory gives the Boilermakers a 9-win season. And we'll be talking about that. I don't know, this could go on for hours the way this game went out. But I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel and the 811 restaurant as well. We appreciate you and we appreciate all you've done for us in 2021 as we bring 2021 to a close. And at least for Purdue fans, Tom, I don't know. It wasn't a perfect game by any stretch, but it was an amazingly entertaining game. You know, just for a fan, you know, on bowl week to tune in and watch a great college football game with all that drama. And if you're a Purdue fan, it was even more to the case, just an unreal win for Purdue.
Yeah, a lot of back and forth, obviously. And, you know, guys, we heard so much in the lead end of this game about the up-tempo Tennessee offense, about how they jump on opponents quickly right out of the gate. And sure enough, right? According to script,
yeah.
You look up from your computer, it's 21-7 Tennessee in the first quarter. You go, my gosh, Purdue's worst fears are being realized here. But amazingly, the defense took those punches, right? Second quarter, I think they gave up. They only gave up no points in the second quarter. I think less than 100 yards of offense to Tennessee. Actually had the lead at halftime after falling behind 21-7. So I know this defense took a lot of body blows against Tennessee, gave up a lot of yards, a lot of points. But I was thinking this to myself walking back from the stadium tonight, you know, when it came time to make that one big stop, to make that one big play, the defense rose to the occasion, right? And time and again, fellas, before we came on camera, I was talking to Brian, time and again in the course of this game, the defense got the offense the ball several times with the lead, with the chance to extend the lead, and the offense wasn't able to capitalize. So I know if you look, again, just look at the black and white, it doesn't look pretty, but I thought by and large, given what this defense had going against it with personnel losses, I thought it ended up performing pretty well.
Yeah, Brian, and I'll get to you, Brian, but you look at these names here, and of course, the guy you've been talking about all year with Chris Jefferson, 15 tackles. Mm-hmm. You have Prince Boyd Jr. with 5 tackles. I mean, guys that just haven't been part of this defense. A Jeff Marks sighting with 2 tackles. I mean, just all important plays in a situation where Purdue needed all of that. Yes, it might be the best performance I've ever seen when you give up 670 yards or whatever it was. It was unreal from that standpoint. But you have to give Purdue's defense credit because I think it's the only way they get back in the game. Tennessee actually officially 663 yards. The only way that Purdue gets back in this game is by shutting them out in the second quarter. I mean, and the fact that Purdue gets back and has the lead at halftime, I thought was pretty remarkable. Brian, you were out doing other important things today and obviously got a chance to watch the game, but we're watching high school basketball and Purdue basketball commits. But this was a remarkable game, and give us what your perspective was and your ability to watch it and see what you saw in the Purdue win.
Yeah, just an unbelievable culture game for Purdue in terms of it's to the point now where when people say it's next man up in press conferences, we just roll our eyes because the meaning has been completely drained from that term because it doesn't mean anything. Because when you just say it all the time, it doesn't matter anymore. But for Purdue to have won this game playing the guys they were playing, I know nobody wants to focus on who they didn't have, but too bad. This wasn't just George Karloftis and David Bell. Branson Dean was a huge loss. Greg Long was a huge loss. Dedrick Mackey was a huge loss. The list, Milton Wright was an enormous loss. I forgot about him. For Purdue to do this, throwing the ball to Colin Sullivan late in the fourth quarter. Colin Sullivan hadn't caught a pass all year. He barely played all year. Deion Burks makes an enormous catch. Jeff Marks, Prince Boyd, those guys barely played all season long. Joseph Anderson, I think, was out there, made a big play.
Right.
Barely played all year. For Purdue to do this, this was the epitome of what they mean when they say next man up. It's not that trite little cliche that nobody really pays any attention to when somebody says it, because it's just part of the landscape nowadays. But it's about being ready. And when you're ready, playing your butt off when you have your opportunity. And that's precisely what all of these guys did today. This was for Purdue's defense. This was what they signed up for, was we're going to give up yards, we're going to give up points, but we're going to go down swinging. And that's precisely what happened. But what I meant before when I said this was a big-time culture game for Purdue, yeah. Purdue showed a mentality in this game that you could build a program around. If this is what you get, if you get to the point where this sort of thing is what defines you, the sort of resilience Purdue showed today, the sort of readiness all of these guys who barely played all year show, that is something that becomes identity and then becomes your program. Just a really unbelievably impressive win for Purdue. And I'm trying not to overstate it, but it's hard to understate it.
Yeah, I think that's the true thing. You know, you look at some of the great victories, and we won't necessarily go into that list, but one guy that I think, I don't know, Brian, use the term epitomize, whatever, Brock Thompson. I mean, here's a guy that's going to have surgery on both legs, has gone through the personal challenges of his family illness, moved back here, really didn't get used that much this year, in all honesty. Was dealing with injuries, made some plays. But today, not only does he sets the all-time Purdue Bowl record with 217 yards in receiving, and made just a couple, and really made, yes, he made the long touchdown pass in the fourth quarter, but his touchdown reception to answer Tennessee in the first quarter to at least slow them a little bit was huge as well. I mean, again, Tom, and Brian's right, but it's hard not to understate this, because what he did was just unbelievable today, making challenge catches or jump ball catches on two bad wheels is going to go down in history, really, at Purdue, is one of the great performances of all time.
Yeah, boy, Purdue needed it, obviously. Jeff Brom talked about that. He was asked about Brock Thompson, obviously, and he basically said he had no choice. He had to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were at the bottom of the proverbial barrel, if you will. And, you know, Brock Thompson, anybody who talks to Brock Thompson comes away very impressed. He seems like the kind of person who has his priorities in line, very much a hard worker, super humble. Comes from a family that's very, I think he's really instilled that in him, an athletic family, with a father who played pro baseball, obviously. So Brock's dialed in and a hard worker and a no-nonsense guy. We were always told he was a leader from the day he got on campus. They started talking about him being a leader when we were at Big Ten Media Day.
Yeah.
He'd only been on campus for a few weeks probably by then maybe. So that tells you a lot about Brock Thompson right there. And you're right, Alan. I'm sure it was painful for him not to get the chance to play or get a whole lot of catches this year. But David Bell, Milton Wright obviously take up a lot of those. But he never says a peep. He just keeps working hard. And he was rewarded today. And he certainly is probably going to have a big role going in next year too, fellas. And real quick too, tight end Payne Durham, right? We all knew that the tight ends were going to have a big day today. And Payne Durham, that 62-yard catch he had, just a highlight reel moment. And shedding tacklers, tiptoeing down the sideline to pay dirt. I mean, just a signature play for a great guy too. And, boy, Payne came up big, and Purdue needed him to deliver. He also, I think, caught the two-point conversion pass right
there. Right, it was a huge play,
Yeah, so Payne Durham, boy, he's coming back next year with Garrett Miller, who made this Superman catch today. Purdue's going to have two very good tight ends once again next season.
You know, Brian, you talk about this, and you've written about it also, looking at where this program in 2019 and 20, and I'm not saying it's hard for us to evaluate, truly evaluate leadership or what's going on in the locker room, But one thing it seems like, you talk about building programs, one thing it seems pretty clear, at least if you listen to what Jeff Brohm has to say, he talks about Payne Durham being one of the best leaders he's had. And Durham, I think, if I heard it right, on his post-game radio, he said Durham was battling illness, whatever, not COVID apparently, and he was, you know, not 100%. But, you know, you've got guys, and obviously Jackson Anther, who will be gone finally, I guess, but sadly, because what a finish he had as well. But just that leadership quotient of it, you know, you made a leader out of a guy like George Karloftis too. I mean, a guy that came in, and I guess that's what I'm saying in terms of culture and move. You know, you cover this and men's basketball, and you got a men's basketball program that's got great culture. I didn't see Jeff Brohm's program necessarily developing that. But now, you know, you have to look at it and say, my gosh, you got some guys that are got to be great locker room people. And a win like today really helps. I mean, Brian, is that an oversimplification, or is that what you see might be reality?
Yeah, no, I think Purdue obviously has some guys. I think Jackson Anthrop's been an unbelievable example setter. It was interesting to hear what Brock Thompson said about Jackson Anthrop in that press conference. That was unsolicited. He just kind of brought that up. That was one of the most memorable things I think I've heard said in a post-game press conference in some time. Of course, post-game press conferences kind of are what they are sometimes. But I think Brock Thompson's becoming that guy, just an unbelievable example. I spent all year long picking him as my pick to click in those stupid predictions posts we do every Friday, because I thought he had a certain energy about him, a certain kind of something about him that I always figured any week now he's going to have that game. And I finally move off him. And sure enough, but that performance by Brock Thompson today is something that they should be showing on that loop in the football office is playing 24 hours a day, because that was Jake Taylor at the end of Major League beating out the bunt, you know, like you were just watching him run on two bad legs and just marveling at what this kid was doing. I mean, if there was ever a personification of rising to the occasion against all odds, this was it. And, you know, I don't know exactly what people mean when they say, you know, a Purdue guy, a Boilermaker, whatever term you want to use, but
yeah,
I think generally speaking, toughness and grit and all of that stuff, you know, is probably part of it. And I can't imagine a gutsier, you know, performance by anyone more than what you saw from Brock Thompson today. He may as well have been pushing around that field on one of those little scooters.
Yeah. Well, and then it brings it to the other leader, which is the quiet leader. And, you know, you watch Aiden O'Connell. And Aiden O'Connell, as we've talked about, I think, before we started the show, wasn't perfect today. You might have built a case a little bit. He might have even pressed a little bit on a couple of his interceptions. But, again, here's a guy that was, as they were talking about in the broadcast, and Brian, I think, was the only guy that ever wrote an article about him a couple of years ago, or in 2019, I should say, you know, about this guy really might be able to play someday. And I don't know, where do you start with him? I mean, he was just, again, I know he wasn't perfect today, and he missed some passes that I think he'd like to have had back, or he might have thrown for 700 yards today. But, again, he made play after play when he had to make them, and that's been the story of Aiden O'Connell's season, and it's almost a mythical when you talk about what this guy has accomplished, and he's got another encore performance in 2022.
He's like Purdue's Kurt Warner, right?
Yeah.
we'll just go ahead and say he worked at Hy-Vee, second groceries too.
Yeah.
Yeah, great story. Another chapter, 5 touchdown passes. The interceptions, we can all agree they were ugly. First picks, though, since October 23rd against Wisconsin, when we also threw 3 interceptions. And, again, you guys talked about it. Ryan did, too, off camera. Maybe he was trying to do too much. Maybe he felt obliged, like he had to carry the load today. But, again, yeah, he did have his bumps. But, by and large, he was Aiden O'Connell, and we know what makes him special. And, you know, I was thinking, too, on the offense, a couple of times I looked up and at the offensive line. And there was one point the left side of the offensive line had two true freshmen.
Yeah.
On the goal line. Yeah. Musa and Bo, unbelievable. So those guys were seeing some quality snaps. Eric Miller had gotten dinged up, and they had to shuffle around the line there for a little while. So, yeah, kudos to that line. Only gave up two sacks, I think, to Aiden O'Connell. He was largely able to work, for the most part, unfettered, which obviously always does help. So, yeah, again, I wanted to mention the two freshman offensive linemen. And just hopping back to the defense real quick too, guys, Sanusi Kane.
Yeah.
When we talked about Dedrick Mackey, a 12-game starter, was not available today. And that thrust Sanusi Kane to play the cornerback role today. And I thought he performed pretty well, honestly. Those are three pretty good Tennessee wide receivers there. They're going to make their plays. But I thought Sanusi Kane acquitted himself pretty well. And, you know, we also have to talk about the kicker, right? I mean, you know, four field goals today. Mitchell Finneran, 39-yard game winner. The guy started off like a house of fire, hit a little bit of a blip midseason, battled through that, finished very strong, guys. I think he's 25 of 29 on the year. And, again, I thought at one point when Purdue was kicking those field goals, I said to myself, they're going to end up regretting this at some point. And it didn't end up costing them. They needed the points. But then again, Finneran at the end of the game comes through in the ultimate pressure situation, guys. That's basically a road game, overtime, 39 yards away, and he nails it to win it. So, again, another good guy. If you ever talk to Mitchell Finneran, you come away very impressed with that Sanford transfer.
You know, you look at that, and we're not apologizing for a off, quote-unquote, off, unquote, day for Aiden O'Connell, 26 to 47, 534 yards, only 2 yards short of his career high and 12 yards short of a Purdue Bowl and all-time record, I should say, which I think was set by Curtis Painter. Five touchdowns, yes, three picks, only 55%. So his completion percentage did go down ever so little amount, but that I think is a thing. And you watch him on the, you know, I went back and watched the fourth quarter replay again. He doesn't have hardly any reaction. Now he does put his hand on his helmet when he knows he's thrown a bad pass. He kind of raises his hands up and kind of rubs his head a little bit. But boy, that guy is just stoic and just plays moving it forward. And I think it has to have a calming effect when you're a Colin Sullivan coming into a game or Deion Burks or whatever, you're coming in and you don't know which end is up and you got a guy like that in your huddle. It's got to help. So that to me was an extremely impressive thing. All right. I've never been to see a game. I think we did the count. I did the count post game, 6 pass interference penalties against Tennessee, 14 penalties all told. A huge factor in the game, and you're going to hear a lot in the next week if you turn on Tennessee media, and not all of it's wrong. You know, obviously some tough calls there. There was obviously there's going to be a lot of discussion, Brian, on a play that you didn't see. So you didn't get to, in real time, you didn't get the chance to see overtime, but the whistle in the end zone in the overtime when they did not get in the end zone, his forward progress was stopped and it paved the way for the Purdue game-winning field goal, but one of the things that I think you did see that surprised me that Tennessee didn't do in its last chance when it had the 56-yard field goal attempt at the end is they had a couple chances to really improve their field goal position or their field position and have a much shorter field goal and didn't do it. That was a surprising thing as well. But it's a game of unbelievable storylines, Brian.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know how much of that was – on the quarterback because they had they had that one-on-one coverage up top all day pretty much because Purdue was playing man, and that's a pretty big advantage for Tennessee, and I'm sure it's a hard one to turn down when it's there.
No doubt.
It did seem to not make a whole lot of sense that they weren't trying to play for that field goal at the end by hitting a few passes to the sidelines or whatever. Time was on their side, wasn't it? If I recall correctly,
and they had three timeouts.
They had all their time. That was so funny about the last 5 minutes of the game was they scored like 8 touchdowns without anyone using a timeout. But yeah, Tennessee, I thought made some tactical errors. You know, I thought not taking the field goal in overtime was insanity. I guess I could see it both ways, but I just don't see how anyone in any game ever just says, okay, we're going to put our defense on the field and they have to prevent a field goal to win this game. I mean, when you're starting at the 25-yard line, you're pretty much asking for pushing them backward, blocking the kick, or getting a turnover. And if somebody just needs a field goal, they're not going to do anything outside the ordinary and run the risk of turning the ball over anyway. So I did not understand not taking the points there. That seemed like a testosterone call on Josh Heupel's part. Perhaps if the stadium wasn't full of orange, perhaps he might have thought differently about that and not let hubris take over there. But I thought Tennessee did produce some favors with all the penalties, with some of the decisions we just discussed. I thought Tennessee did produce some favors, but that doesn't take anything away from what Purdue did. Tennessee helped give Purdue an opportunity to win the game. Purdue had to go out and win it. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah, you know, you look at this, and I, in my position during the game in the radio booth, you have an open air. So you could – it was intense. I mean, I thought the crowd was extremely loud. It was like a playoff, you know, NFL playoff-type environment. The fans stood the whole game. I mean, the Purdue – section that darn near stood the whole game. It was just an extremely intense atmosphere. And when you talk about a Music City Bowl record of 69,000 or wherever they were, and about 62,000 of them were in orange. And, you know, that just adds to what the story of this season, which really ends up being 5 wins away from Ross-Ade Stadium. No Purdue team has won that had won 4 in the regular season away from Ross-Ade Stadium since 1943. So, again, a milestone year. And as we kind of start to wind our way down to the end of this podcast at 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, that's a storyline that, again, Brian, I thought hit the nail on the head, Tom, about talk about things that you can build a program around. You win and won in a road game environment today without question. And you also won the games that you won at Iowa, certainly, and Nebraska, some tough games on the road that got the job done. Again, this will be a memorable 2021, but a memorable end to a 2021 season.
You know, to see so, and Brian talked about it earlier too, I think you did too, on the roll call of guys that they had to use today. And not only do those guys play, but they contribute.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even for those players, guys, even for Joe Anderson, a Jeff Marks, what that does for that guy's confidence to know that he's really as a valued member of the team and he got a chance to contribute just goes miles and miles. And it adds more value to whatever the coaches are telling those guys in July and August about always being ready, always being prepared. We need you. And those words don't ring hollow when you got tangible evidence of yes, this does come to fruition and we do need you and you can be a valuable member of the team. I think everybody wants to feel like they're needed and they belong. And boy, everybody got a chance to do that today. And with one of the biggest wins in recent school history. And guys, I don't know about you, but as far as bowl game wins go, I can only think of one that was more exciting than this. It was the 98 Alamo Bowl. You guys may disagree, but that was a number 5 ranked Kansas State team that should have been playing for the national title. And a lot of theatrics in that game too, not to take any shine off what happened today, but it's always kind of fun to look back and think, where does this win rank another in the history of Purdue bowl games? And certainly that game in San Antonio 23 some odd years ago still rings very special for me too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I put it on top of it, but it's equal or close to it. Of course,
now, you know,
the Isaac Jones.
Pro Purdue, or are we talking just exciting period? Because we lost a couple of bowl games to Georgia that would qualify the other side of the coin there.
No doubt.
Well, you bring up that 2000 Outback Bowl, but no wins, Brian. I mean, you were probably in San Antonio for that Alamo Bowl, weren't you?
Never got to the Alamo Bowl. I was
on the sidelines, I think, when Jones, because I got blocked, I couldn't tell that he caught the ball from Drew Brees. But yeah, this goes down there. It's got asked that several times.
Then look what Purdue did in 1999 and 2000. That was quite a stepping stone for the program at that point. Obviously, I'm not saying Purdue is necessarily going to get to that level, but why not? You know, I think they have a good chance to be a legit Big Ten West contender next year, guys. I know we're a long way from September, but since we're in the media, we get to look ahead, right?
Yeah.
Just the fact that Aiden O'Connell is back, to me, is going to put Purdue right in the thick of that. We've talked about the schedule already before, guys. It's advantageous, too. So we can already start hyping up 2022 if we want. But O'Connell's return certainly is going to bring a lot of shine, a lot of energy, and a lot of excitement to this program next year.
Yeah, no Ohio State, no Michigan, no Michigan State on the schedule next year. Michigan State obviously won its bowl game today also in come-from-behind fashion over Pitt. But this is it does lead you – it was almost like a spring game in some ways because you were looking deep in the roster to figure out where you were. But, again, going back to the kind of trying to tie this all together, Brian, that foundation and that ability to not only, you know, think about this, guys, and I'm sure you already have, just the transfer portal. This was an audition of, a game that nobody else, everybody in the country is watching. If you're watching football today, I would think Purdue would be in a good situation if there's a couple guys out there that want to be really good receivers. And the good thing also for Purdue is, there'll be life after David Bell because they'll have several guys that were injured this year return. But I'm circling down to something here, Brian, and that is it as simple now that you get back to you can throw anybody out there and still throw for 536 yards? Yeah. That's a good thing. I know it's not that simple, but it has to be a good sign, again, if you're talking about building a program.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can throw anyone out there and throw for 500 yards. I think, you know, Purdue's a quarterback school with a quarterback coach and all of that stuff. But I think the thing about this game, you know, the thing about Aiden O'Connell is we talked about him earlier coming from where he came from. You know, how many times did we hear eighth out of nine or whatever? And he had to be a scout team wide receiver just to practice. But this wasn't just a walk-on becoming a starter. This was a walk-on becoming Purdue's guy, you know, Purdue's foundation here. I mean, they went into this game, and this was Aiden O'Connell, you have to go win us this game because we're going to throw it everywhere. Most of our best players aren't playing today. Go win the game. And I think that's what he walks into next season. I think him coming back next year puts Purdue right back in that category they're in right now where, hey, anything's possible because you have your guy, you have your quarterback. And it wasn't this way for half the season. I remember writing many times, Purdue has quarterbacks you can win with, but you won't win because of. And right now that looks like the stupidest thing I've ever written. I've written some dumb stuff in my career a lot every day. But this is also validation of the Brahms. This is also what was promised when Jeff Brohm was hired, brought his brother with him, that, hey, we've got quarterback whisperers here. We've got guys who know how to coach quarterbacks, who know how to put them in positions to be successful. And at some point this season, they figured this out too, and they started putting Aiden O'Connell in really good positions. They started scheming better pass protection. They started getting him stuff that was allowing them to be really successful throwing the ball down the field. Next year, you're going to have receivers back. you know, hopefully for everybody involved, you have Milton Wright back. Hopefully Mershon Rice can actually stay on the field for a whole season, that poor kid. Brock Thompson's not going to be running on wooden legs anymore. Presumably, you know, Payne Durham's back, Garrett Miller's back, TJ Sheffield's back. You're going to have some weapons around Aiden O'Connell. You're in this comfort zone now from a play calling perspective, from an offensive design perspective. He's got to be as comfortable and confident as ever. And he has shown you the value at quarterback of simply a temperament and maturity and just being unflappable and things like that. He's got a lot of those intangibles. You're sitting here looking at this season now, next year, you have set a hell of a tone for next year. You have your biggest piece of the puzzle back. There's no reason this can't be a springboard to Purdue being right back here a year from now. I'm sorry, it's 12:50 in the morning and I've lost my ability for coherence. But I think the one thing Purdue did this season as a team was sort of I don't want to say redefine possible, because they've won games like Iowa, Michigan State and whatnot before, but anything was possible at all times. And I think you go into next season thinking the exact same thing. I wouldn't go into next year thinking there's nobody on that there's anyone on that schedule Purdue can't beat. Just like for the most part this season, I thought there wasn't anybody on this schedule Purdue couldn't beat. Didn't mean they were going to beat them all, but I thought they could beat them all.
Yeah, all positive things looking forward. Tom, we'll give you, since you're the guy covering this on a day-to-day basis, the last word as we wrap this up. And I'm down to 6% on battery, so I better get moving. So, you know, let's wrap this up and say, put a wrap on this season, 2021, 9 wins, first time since 2003, and really a remarkable year.
Yeah, you know, talking to some people down here this week, Tennessee fans or media, I should say, going in, we all thought, man, 6-6, just get to a bowl, right? You just got to get to a bowl, 6 wins. That's doable. 7 wins, maybe that's your ceiling. Well, Purdue obviously broke through all that, the 9 wins, Alan. We talked about the first time since 2003. So exceeded their expectations. We all knew there was a sense of urgency, I think, this year after going bowlless 2 years in a row. The mojo appears to be back. And like I said before, you know, the anticipation for next year is going to be pretty great. So, a season that was much needed and a program that I think very much looks like it's on the rise right now.
All right. We will wish all of you Happy New Year's Eve and Happy New Year. And a lot, I think 2022 sets up to be an extremely interesting year, not only for the next 3 months of Purdue men's basketball, but what we might see on Labor Day weekend when Purdue opens up against Penn State to open up the 22 season as well. So on behalf of Brian and Tom, I want to wish you all, like I said, Happy New Year. I want to thank our sponsor, and that is, of course, the Union Club Hotel and the 811 restaurant. We are grateful for them, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to work with Tom and Brian for another year. A lot of fun to do that, and we'll in a fun day if you're a Purdue fan, or even if you're just a good football fan, this was an amazing day that Purdue fans will not soon forget. So have a great rest of your weekend, and bring in the new year in a good light, and we'll look forward to a great 2022. And thank you all for listening and watching, and we'll see you next week on our next Saturday simulcast.